Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and often more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, and we are live in the Palace of Westminster, where we've had quite a night. I think to start, it's worth pointing out that Theresa May this evening told Conservative MPs that if her withdrawal agreement passes, she will stand aside in time for someone else to step in and lead the second half of the Brexit negotiations. We then had a series of indicative votes in which MPs tried to work out if there was a majority for any form of Brexit or in fact non-Brexit, and that didn't exactly go to plan. But James, just to start us off in order of timely events, tell us about that meeting Theresa May had with her MPs, because you were stood outside.
So this has been, even by the recent standards of British politics, this has been one of the most dramatic evenings I can remember. Theresa May turned up at the 1922 committee this evening, and everyone thought she was going to say that she would leave if MPs voted for her deal. But no one, not even members of the cabinet going into the meeting, knew for sure. She then stood up and said, basically, if you vote for my deal, I will go and allow someone else to take over the second part of the Brexit process. A pretty dramatic statement by any Prime Minister to essentially say, vote for this and I will quit. That appeared to be making some progress. You know, it got Boris Johnson to come out and say that he would now vote for it. Ian Duncan Smith to say that he would now come out and vote for it. Charlie Elphick to come out, and the Secretary of ERG to come out and say he would vote for it. But it was clear that this was still going to be tight, because he had a very emotional speech by Steve Baker tonight at a meeting of the ERG explaining why he wouldn't back it. But then I think the biggest blow to the Prime Minister's plan came when the Democratic Unionist Party came out and said that they would not be supporting the deal. Without their votes, it is very hard to see how her deal passes.
And that was a statement from Arlene Foster, but then she was then followed up by the Westminster leader, Nigel Dodds, who made clear that when they say they're not going to support it, they don't mean that they're just going to abstain, they are going to actively vote against it. Do you think there's any chance they will change their mind between now and presumably Friday, when the government are going to try and bring about a vote?
Well, I think it's quite clear the government are going to try and bring it back on Friday. There was some kind of classic ructions with John Bercow after these indicative votes that strongly suggested that. The DUP want treaty-level change. The only way I can see that you could do that is if the UK government were to basically call up the EU, and they would be undoubtedly trying their patience at this point, and say, look...
Yeah, they might not pick up.
Yeah, exactly. And basically say, look, this Stormont lock we are proposing to the DUP, but if any aspect of the UK diverge from Northern Ireland... Oh, sorry, if Northern Ireland diverged from the UK on regulations because of the backstop, the rest... Great Britain would follow suit to prevent any divergence. Can we get that signed off at your level to give the DUP reassurance? Now, people say that there's a precedent for this, which is the Danish government essentially made promises to their own citizens in a protocol to the Maastricht Treaty to try and reassure them before the second referendum in Denmark on the Maastricht Treaty. I think there is a problem with this, though. One is that the EU is probably going to do more than deliver a Gallic shrug if it's asked to kind of reconvene again to sign something off. And then I think the second issue is, for some even the EU worry that this would be used by the UK as a kind of backdoor for the whole of the UK to the single market, but without free movement.
And also there's a time issue, isn't there? Because if this vote is going to go ahead on Friday, we have over a day, but it's not particularly long for them to try and get these changes.
Yeah, and you'd also, the problem is, you would need all 27 EU member states to sign it off if it was going to be a council conclusion. And you are trying people's patience, and I'm not sure that there is sufficient diplomatic goodwill to make that happen at this speed.
And James, given that it currently seems like Theresa May is still on course for defeat, what happens in terms of her future if her withdrawal agreement doesn't go through Parliament?
So I think we have a very... I mean, get your head around this one. I mean, you can actually, because you wrote about it the other week, which is we're in a very odd situation, which is tonight the chance of a general election, I think, have increased quite substantially, because the option that got closest to winning tonight was a customs union. There are a large group of people in the cabinet who think that if the House of Commons votes for a customs union, it would be better to go back to the country than accept that. So we could have this really weird upshot of this evening, that the Tory party are led into a general election by a leader who just weeks beforehand was promising MPs that she would go.
Because to be clear, Theresa May hasn't actually made a promise about leaving if her deal isn't passed, only if it passes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I might mention your tweet on this point, which is, you know, people close to Theresa May are making very clear tonight that this promise is contingent on her deal passing.
Yeah, I spoke to May ally who said to me that ultimately, if the withdrawal agreement didn't pass, there'd be so many problems that Theresa May's future would be very low down on that list. And actually, they personally and others would probably be quite grateful to have an adult at the helm. I don't know if all MPs in the Tory party would agree with that, but it definitely gives you an insight into Number 10's thinking on the issue. Now, moving to these indicative votes, which you touched on, James, tonight these votes came about after the effort by a cross-party group of MPs, led by Oliver Letwin, aided by Nick Bowles, to try and take control of the Commons and really take control of the order paper. And as a result, we saw MPs vote on 8 different Brexit options. They were wide-ranging. We had a no-deal option. We had a permanent customs union. We had a second referendum. There was a Norway-style model, but not one managed to get a majority. So what were the main winners or losers from tonight's votes?
So even on that main winners point, it's not entirely clear in that a confirmatory referendum, or second referendum, if you want to be frank, got the most votes. But the one that came closest to winning in the Commons tonight was Ken Clark's customs union amendment. And what I think is fascinating about this is that failed by 8 votes. Now, remember, people could vote for as many things as they liked on this list of 8. So this isn't like, oh, my option got knocked out, so I'll vote for this next time round. So this customs union thing is clearly within touching distance of passing. But it can only pass if people who want a second referendum are prepared to say, oh, actually, I'm not going to get that, so I'm going to back this softer Brexit option that would mean accepting that the UK was leaving the EU and leaving the single market.
Yeah, I spoke to an MP tonight who, just fresh from voting, has said they voted for the revoking Article 50 idea and also for a second referendum, and they had ignored every other option because they don't want to compromise and go for this soft middle Brexit. And I have to say that I didn't get the impression they were about to change tune just because another amendment came close. Everyone still seems to be very determined that they want to get their preferred outcome. When you look at the Norway style Brexit, that is something that has been championed very loudly by people like Nick Bowles. In terms of MPs, you have Lucy Powell in Labour, Stephen Kinnock, saying that this is what commands the most support. It didn't seem like that from the numbers tonight.
No, I think Number 10 would probably preferred Norway to do a bit better and the customs union to do a bit worse, because if they're going to have to get Labour votes to pass this plan, there are very few Labour MPs who are against the UK being in a customs union with the EU. There are a much larger group of Labour MPs who are uncomfortable with the idea of free movement continuing. And it would be easier if it looked like the thing in pole position following these indicative votes was Norway Plus, I think, to get some more Labour votes on Friday for the government's deal. If a customs union is what looks like in pole position, it's more difficult because people will think, well, I'll vote against meaningful vote 3, and then may or be forced to accept a customs union.
And for example, Gareth Snell, Labour MP representing a Leave seat, has been pushing for a customs union. So you are right in the sense, James, it seems very hard to see how this is going to incentivise Labour MPs to get behind Theresa May's deal. So if we take that into account, the fact the DUP don't seem like they're turning, Steve Baker and several other Eurosceptics don't want to follow Boris and Boris Johnson and so forth onward, does Theresa May have any hope of passing her deal on Friday?
Well, I think we've got a hint of what the government might try in a point of order from Steve Barclay, the Brexit Secretary, after his indicative votes, when he basically said, you've got to vote for the withdrawal agreement, because all of these options require the withdrawal agreement. I wonder whether the government might just bring back the withdrawal agreement on Friday, so it would be different, so John Bercow would find it harder to say, oh, we can't vote for this, and say, look, this House needs to make its mind up on the political declaration, but here's the withdrawal agreement. There isn't a transition without that, and there isn't any, you know, there isn't the orderly withdrawal that the House says it wants about it, so vote for this or not. And it would essentially put all these people on the spot, because if you took away the political declaration and the government said we'll listen to the House on the political declaration, you would have a kind of chance of trying to get some votes, because you can get from the withdrawal agreement to a customs union or Norway Plus. But my caution against that is I think it would send a lot of Tory MPs very upset if there was an idea that, unless you accompanied it with an election before the next phase.
And also, if you were just voting for purely the withdrawal agreement, isn't that by definition the most blind of blind Brexit?
Yeah, it would be properly blindfold, no peeking Brexit. And I think the challenge of that is Labour have been very clear that they wouldn't accept this blind Brexit. But I think the idea would be the hope to kind of ramp pressure up on Labour, saying, well, the only way to get an orderly withdrawal is to vote for this.
Okay, thank you, James. And we'll be back tomorrow with more updates as this saga rolls on. Thanks for listening. And we also have an offer. You may have heard of it before. It is 12 issues for £12 and you get a £20 John Lewis voucher. Just go to www.spectator.co.uk/voucher.